Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleichhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schleichhofer.
Hey, how you doing? This is Preston Schleichhofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. This week we have, this is actually a special video episode, and we have Matthew West with us again. And he's a former law enforcement, actually still an active law enforcement officer, and I'm retired. We're going to get together and do this show on the internal threats, attacks on police, as a situation report from Civil Defense Radio. So, Matt, welcome to Civil Defense Radio again, this time on video.
Thank you very much, Preston. I'm glad to be here as always. I love listening to the show. I think there's a lot of important information that we need to get out to the general public to let them know what's really going on behind the scenes, not just what mass media is poking down our throats.
Yeah, I agree. You know, too many times I speak with people who only have one perspective on what's going on out there. And I try to enlighten them a little bit more about something else. You know, there might be like this Wuhan red flu that we got going on. There might be something else behind that, behind what's going on in this country, rather than, you know, we have to be very secure and wear our masks and gloves. And even when we're outside and driving in our car by ourselves, we got to wear them. You know, that kind of craziness is counterproductive. And it just supports the point that this is about an election, I believe, and not necessarily about the virus, because there were many viruses like this in the last few decades, and we didn't do any of this. Matter of fact, most people didn't even know about it.
Correct. You know, from the H1N1 to Ebola, you know, it got a little bit of press, but it quickly died out. And it's still out there, still going around. Again, the flu is just as deadly as any other virus out there. And it's not just, they don't die from the flu. It's they're dying from complications from the flu. Right. Same thing with this virus, with COVID-19. You know, a lot of it is, you know, people that are dying, it's because of complications. And I don't want to minimize this as, you know, it's not a dangerous virus. It is, especially to certain people that do have underlying health conditions. You may not know that you have that underlying health condition until you get it. So there are some issues, and I don't want to minimize it, but I think it's being really blown out of proportion at certain levels of the government and certain groups.
Yeah. Well, there's people like Dan Bongino. He's a national figure. His somebody related to him, I believe it was him, died, and they told them that it was a COVID-related death. And he goes, no, it was cancer. We knew it. They were in hospice for this ailment, and they passed. It wasn't COVID. And so stuff like that has happened. A lot
exactly.
of people are reporting same or similar types of instances. But let's switch gears to the police. You know, there's a huge attack on police right now. And, you know, you're an active law enforcement. You don't serve in a law enforcement capacity, but you're still a commissioned peace officer in the state of Texas. I'm retired. I have, 27 years of federal law enforcement, 10 years military law enforcement. And I have my ability to carry in all 50 states, territories, and the District of Columbia. So, you know, I feel for these guys. I feel for them in the horrific attacks, one, physical attacks that they're getting, and two, the psychological attacks of their supposed leaders who are attacking them on the same issues that these neo-Marxist leftists from BLM and Antifa are doing in the streets.
Exactly. And you hit a key point there when you talked about, you know, the leadership, the lack of leadership, turning on the police. You know, I just celebrated my 20th year as a peace officer. And, you know, looking back where things have been and where things have come, it's dramatically changed night and day. Yeah. I'm second generation law enforcement. Both my parents were in law enforcement. And so I got blue blood, I guess, you know, it's part of the family. But I also look at things objectively. Like anything, I try to look at everything from each side of the story. Mm-hmm. My undergrad degree is actually a liberal arts degree from the University of Texas San Antonio in American Studies. And I went through a lot of what they call the studies classes, which is where, you know, a lot of the socialist leftist indoctrination is starting to occur in those classes. And I did see some of that. But what that did was allow me to see the perspective from the other side and where things are coming from. So it really opened my eyes to seeing it from both sides of the story. And I try to encourage people and people that are watching this video, and if we put this on the podcast, listening to us, that, you know, be objective, look at each side of the story, but be informed. That is the most important thing. And I think when you start digging deep and you start looking at things, you're going to find out and you're going to draw your own conclusion that what you're seeing on mainstream media is really what it's not in real life. And living just a stone throw away from Austin, Texas, you know, I'm already seeing the defunding of the police, the anti-police sentiment. And looking at the city council that just slashed $150 million from the Austin police budget, you know, you look at, and some of it is true. They're doing away with departments. Some of it, it's a smoke and mirrors game where they're not really getting rid of it. They're just transferring outside of the police department. Some of that, I think, is a positive thing, such as crime labs. I think crime labs should be independent from the police department to add a little bit more credibility, and that's what they're doing. They're moving it to a civilian crime lab within the city of Austin. But you look at things that they are defunding. So I'm going to read a clip here from KVUE online on their news, and this was published on August 13th of this year. It says almost $80 million of the cuts will separate certain functions, will separate certain functions from APD, such as the 911 call center and special investigations unit. The remaining $49 million in cuts will defund APD units, including mounted patrol, traffic enforcement, and lake patrol. That money would be put on hold as council members reimagine. That word scares me. Reimagine public safety over the course of the year. You also hear this in Minneapolis that they're trying to reimagine or trying to figure out how to remodel the public safety concept and not make it a police department, which is going to be next to impossible to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Reimagining is a play on words to not necessarily tell the public that they're going to do something dramatic, but that's what they're planning on doing.
And exactly.
It's just these neo-Marxists, I mean, we have them in the county that I live in too. They're in smaller numbers, but they're gaining in power. They're coming from Northern Virginia and other places. They come in for these jobs in the school system. And, you know, school police are being hit now with these reimagining law enforcement in the schools, you know, resource officers and that. That's all part of this goal of reducing the police to create more chaos in order to bring about their desired effect. And it's terrible.
And it's also about votes.
Well, yes, but what they're doing is they're scaring votes away from their side. I don't see a win for them with all this stuff. they're banking on getting a bunch of kids to vote for them, but they're not thinking about the middle-class families who have voted Democrat for a long time, but are seeing this craziness as a threat to them and their families.
But I was pulling up this article from KVUE's website. They had an informal poll that they had on their website saying, do you support the defunding of the Austin Police Department? And overwhelmingly on this poll said no, they do not support it. Yeah. And I like gathering intelligence. It's, you know, it's the cop in me, the investigator in me. So every weekend I usually hit Facebook Live or YouTube Live and try to see what's going on in Texas and the Austin area as far as the protests and the riots and the civil unrest. And you see that there's really a small group of people that are out there that are actively rioting.
Yeah.
Yet they're causing so much discern in the United States because the media is picking up on that and blasting it. And you, I always tell everybody, look at the camera angles. When the media is out there in the crowd, you see that they have very, very narrow camera angles with people piled in, which gives the illusion that it's a huge crowd. I just watched an article yesterday where they're talking about they're in Hillary Clinton's campaign that on some of her townhouse meetings that was her deal. She would get camera operators, or the publicity company would get camera operators on a boom lift to get an aerial shot and focus in and narrow in, where you take a crowd of 100 or even 50 and it gives that illusion of 1,000. And that's what we're seeing here. You're seeing the media taking this, making it look like it's a bigger movement than what it is. But the side effect, a negative side effect, is those that are undecided and those that are uninformed are starting to buy into that. They're thinking, oh, wow, well, I really don't know which way to go. This seems it, because the major media outlets tell me this is what I need to buy into. So by golly, let's jump to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, my advice to middle America is, if you call 911 for, you know, a real emergency, are they going to come? Do you want them to come when you call? Yeah, I believe they do. And all this stuff that's going on, and a lot of these politicians are pushing their own agendas over the will of the majority of the people in their cities and counties. And I don't believe that the majority of people in Portland, which is my boyhood home, I don't believe the majority of people there want the police department defunded.
Exactly. And I'm going to read a quote, and this comes from the Daily Chronicle, which is a newspaper out of DeKalb, Illinois. And the DeKalb acting police chief, Bob Reddle, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, course is not in support of them defunding his police department, but this is what he says, and I quote, "To me, defunding is moving money or allocations from the police department elsewhere. I'm against it, and the main reason why is communities across the nation, even our own, they're asking for change, but we don't know what that change is going to be. Change costs money, new training costs money." And you see this is a common theme among all these city councils and different committees and commissions that are doing this defunding is, oh, we want to defund it. We want to get rid of the police department, but we don't have a model yet. We are not prepared to do this. We haven't even thought, you know, 5 minutes down the road to a day down the road to a year, 2 years, 10 years down the road, and how this is going to impact our community by dissolving police departments. And what people don't understand is they're seeing in other cities that have not only defunded but completely dissolved their police department, they haven't gotten rid of law enforcement. A lot of cases, depending on how it's set up, they'll either bring in state police, they'll form a county police.
So
you're seeing different models. They're just basically restructuring their police department. So again, this all goes back to that whole smoke and mirrors act of politics. And the politicians, they want the vote, so they're saying what they think the voters want to hear, when in reality, they're not really changing anything. In fact, they're making the problem worse, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I want to give a shout out to Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best. She's stepping down. She is resigning as of September 2nd because they're trying to defund her police department. And the city council voted Monday to rebalance Seattle's 2020 budget by shrinking the police department by up to 100 officers through layoffs and attrition and cutting the wages of the department's command staff between September and December, according to the Seattle Times. Council member Teresa Mosqueda said before the vote to the council needed to act with urgency and work toward the demands of many Black Lives Matter protesters to eventually defund the police department by 50%. By 50%. Well, I give Chief Best, you know, kudos for taking a stand. And I know she's talented and she'll find some place to land. But in this day and age, I don't know if private industry might be better choice for her. But, you know, Seattle reducing their police force by 50%. Think about what is going on in Minneapolis. Minneapolis, they're trying to do the same thing. They're trying to do, I think they've had a vote to actually defund the police completely or a portion of it. I can't remember what the deal is, but because of all this violence, in many neighborhoods, they can't rely on the police getting there in time because of all the other stuff that's going on. So they've formed their own little militias. They've got neighborhood militias. I've seen them on YouTube.
And this comes from The Guardian online. And now this is a little bit over 2 months old. Shows the date. Actually, June 8th is the date on this article. And this is from the Minneapolis mayor and the city council, where one of the city council persons says, and this is from Lisa Bender, who is the city council president for Minneapolis, and she is quoted as saying, "Our commitment is to end policing as we know it and to recreate a system of public safety that actually keep us safe." Jeremiah Ellison, another Minneapolis councilman, tweeted that the city will dismantle the police department. He's quoted, "And when we're done, we're not simply going to glue it back together," he wrote. "We're going to dramatically rethink how we approach public safety and emergency response." Yet they don't know how to do it. They want to do it, and they're pulling, you know, the string and pulling the trigger, so to speak, on implementing it. But they don't know what they're going to do. They don't have a plan.
Well, actually, I think they do, because it's been tried in many countries around the world. Whenever socialism, the Russian style socialism, or the Maoist style of communism takes over, then it goes through these machinations in order to reduce the legitimate power of the police and turn it into a vessel of the state. It's a way that they turn local police departments into national police departments, and I think that's the way that they're going, because national police departments, especially under a Democrat administration, would be like the last administration that we had, where they turned law enforcement and intelligence against the citizens of the United States. And that is a perfect example of what a national police force in America would look like, especially with these people running it.
And that's a really good point. And you look at these anti-fascists, and who are right now in Oregon, who are they going against? What law enforcement group are they riding against? Well, the federal government.
Well, because they want that prize of the courthouse. Yes. They don't like not being able to, they're a bunch of spoiled little brats. They all need their asses kicked.
Yeah. And their mind, really, I don't know what they're thinking in their mind. It's not socialism that they want. They say they want communism. Some of them do, part of that group. But I don't think they understand what that really means.
No.
Other than, yeah. Well, it's supposed to give us free stuff. And you look at our country, and I got to thinking about this last night. You know, they're trying to move us more to a socialist democracy. But you look at all the social programs we already have in place in the United States, from welfare to low-income housing, unemployment, sick leave. When you look at Karl Marx and when he was writing about socialism, and that his book is totally confusing. Anyone that reads it can tell you that. But he was really talking about, of course, having the worker be invested in the product they make. And that's really where the socialist movement came around. You always hear it, the workers' party, you know, as far as the communism goes, you know, it's all about the worker, the worker, the worker. You look what we have here in the United States. We have our unions. Starting in the early 20th century, early to mid 20th century, the government formed OSHA, places to help with workplace safety issues to make it safer. We set a minimum wage. We have grant programs and low interest rate programs for businesses to not only get them in business, but help them stay in business as well. Those are all government funded. And people, it's like they're oblivious to it that we have no social programs whatsoever.
There's from 29 July on law enforcement today, they have an article, as Democrat-run cities gut their police departments, residents are forming new militia, their own militias. And it's an op-ed by one of the editorial staff there at Law Enforcement Today, which I suggest everybody follow because they have a lot of great articles there. And, you know, they're written from a patriot public service type of perspective like you and I have. Because that's who we are. We're public servants. We've been public servants all of our adult lives, and this is a great publication and news site. But they talk about the Minneapolis and how the residents in some areas still recovering from rioting and unrest are forming community watch and security groups, some bearing firearms to fight a surge in crime. And even some neighborhoods are looking for federal funding to support these guys. Wait a minute. You want to disband the police, but you want to help these neighborhood watch and militia groups in these cities, which are, these areas are predominantly Black, because I've seen them on YouTube. I've seen these guys controlling their neighborhoods and walking, you know, communicating with radios and all kinds of stuff. So, but white guys in a militia who are nationalists, who believe in the Constitution and equal rights for everybody, not just one race, we're vilified. We're called racist. We're called extremists. We're called all kinds of things. But these guys want federal funding to support their neighborhood watch and security groups because the police can't handle it. Makes a lot of sense.
And not only that, what really I find intriguing is with all these protests, you're talking about isolated incidences. Yes, there are bad police officers out there. Yes, unnecessary use of force does happen, but not at the rate that they're trying to make it look to be. You look at a lot of these incidences, you know, why were the police called in the first place? You know, you never see the entire body cam footage until it gets leaked in the United Kingdom, but you don't see the events that led up to this. And a lot of these are in crime-ridden neighborhoods. Actually, if you go to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's website, they have a sub office called the Office of Policy Development and Research. Yeah. And it actually says rates of violent crime in the United States have declined significantly over the past two decades, but they even acknowledge that disparities do exist. Violent crime is geographically concentrated in particular neighborhoods and more localized areas known as hotspots. Evidence suggests that problem-oriented policing of hotspots can be effective. Now, well, wait a minute. Did they just say that a problem area using community-oriented policing is effective? So our own government's acknowledging that, hey, law enforcement does make a difference, especially in these high crime areas. But, you know, Chicago, where they have minority and minority black on black violence on a daily basis, on a weekends when they're having to do the number of people shot per weekend.
Yeah.
Why are people not up in arms about stopping the violence and doing something to those communities, getting in? And I know that there are organizations out there that are trying this, but why are we rallying to have more social programs to help people get out of poverty, to help people socialize? There's such a high level of single parent families. And if you go onto HUD's website and go into that Office of Policy and Development Research, it starts talking about those issues where, you know, being able to, in fact, it says right here, a strong social organization such as youth job opportunities, immigration, and residential stability are among several neighborhood characteristics associated with lower crime rates. So what's that tell us?
That tells us that what they're complaining about is what works or what's supposed to work in those areas, in those neighborhoods.
Yeah. So why are we not seeing the media attention on solving the real problem, fixing the socioeconomic problem from the ground up? You know, what really gets me is you look at these people, and you said at the beginning, you know, it's a lot of white kids that need their ass kicked, you know. And the same thing in these high crime communities, it's about social structure. You know, I worked in a lot of those areas. I know you worked in a lot of low income, high minority areas in your line of work in law enforcement. What was the respect that was given to you by kids?
I had a lot of respect. I had a canine for a while, and I met a lot of those kids. I went into the schools in the drug demand reduction program, and my dog was the catalyst to get in there and talk to these kids about staying away from drugs. And so it was a great opportunity, and it was very, very beneficial too, because the kids just loved the dog and the dog loved them. You know, he would let them walk all over them, you know, little kids, middle age, you know, middle school kids, it didn't matter. He loved them.
And I had the opportunity to work both on the Texas-Louisiana border and the Texas-Mexico border. And we said before, you and I have traversed a lot of the same grounds between Laredo and Eagle Pass and Del Rio over the years. And so I worked in a area that was a very high black population and then a very high Hispanic Mexican population. And one thing I found is that by and large, there are a lot of good people in those neighborhoods. Yes, there is a lot of poverty. There's a lot of despair. I've seen people living in tar paper shacks out in Colonias, out in East Texas. You know, I worked a case on a gentleman that his house was burned down by a neighbor because he wanted that land. That house had been in this gentleman's family since they were giving it to him after his slave ancestors were set free. And they didn't complain about the police. They were thankful the police were there. It was the people. It's that small pocket, that hot spot, as HUD illustrated in their online article, that these communities have their hot spots that breed violent crime. And we know the cycle of violence. Unless something intervenes, it's going to continue on. So you've got a gangster, drug dealer, sex trafficker, that what are they going to teach their kids?
They're
even around to teach their kids, what is the mother of their children, the environment they're growing up in? When I've had to deal with kids that have grown up in that environment, they have been extremely disrespectful. Here about 3 months ago, I had a case of a playground bully at our local city park that was in my subdivision. And my kids come running home and say, "Daddy, Daddy, you know, we just got in a fight with this kid. He picked the fight." So, you know, again, I want both sides of the story. So I go over there and I go up and they point to the kid. And I went to the kid, said, "Hey, can you tell me what's going on?" And the kid starts cussing me out. This kid is 10 years old.
Yeah.
And I said, "You know, I'm not disrespecting you. As an adult, I expect you to respect me as an adult." And he was dropping the F word to me, telling me, you know, flipping me off. And I just, he said, "You know what? You need to find a better way to release your anger because you're going to end up in jail." And he flat out told me, "I don't care. Because the rest of my family are in jail. And that just makes me more of a man." You know, and I mean, I was shocked. I'm walking off, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, this poor kid is destined for prison.
Yeah.
If he lives that long. And as I'm walking off, another parent that saw everything that's going on comes up to me and says, "I want you to know that I watched the interaction. This kid started the whole thing. Your kids did everything they could to get away from it." He goes, "But let me tell you about this family. His cousin pulled a gun on us at another park while we were playing basketball because they wanted to take over the basketball court and we're taking too long. And they pulled a gun on us." So that's the type of family that he comes from. And that just illustrates that cycle of violence. And, you know, it's unfortunate we see this, but law enforcement, this is something people don't realize. And when I try to educate people about how policing works is a lot of times we don't get the chance to do those community relations, to build those kinship, because we are so busy running from call to call to call that all we see are the people committing crimes or victims of crimes. We don't get to see the 85 to 90 to 95% of the rest of that neighborhood that are good, law-abiding, honest-working, hard-working citizens that are just out there to try to make it day by day, paycheck to paycheck. And that takes a bearing on you, because when all you do is sit there and deal with the criminal element day after day, time after time, it's almost a shock when you have to deal with somebody that is actually law-abiding or needs help. And officers that are assigned these very high crime areas, you know, sometimes are targeted, and now more than ever.
Yeah.
So these protests, the civil unrest that we're seeing, is contributing more to the problem more than helping it.
Yeah. Well, you have black officers standing on the line defending a monument or something like that, and you have these white kids come up and call him the N-word and say, "I'm more black than you are." How does that work? I mean, these people are they're not using all their brain power, because their ideological bent has skewed them. Now there is a problem in certain communities that that the government has ruined. You know, you could talk about the black community, you can talk about the Native American community being put on reservations and things like that. So that type of nanny state control ruins the moral fiber of the family. And we see it in both the American Indians that live on reservations. There's high alcoholism, there's high suicide rate, and there's a high violence. And it's just the same in the black community. It's unfortunate, but this is a Democrat problem, because conservative principles, that wouldn't be happening, because families would be staying together. They wouldn't be encouraged to not be married and not have the father in the house and be paid to have multiple children outside of wedlock. I mean, that's what the liberal policies have created in America, and it is part of the destruction that they have planned, that the neo-Marxists have planned for decades.
And here's something that I found interesting. A lot of my friends, being from South Texas, a lot of friends and acquaintances I am, a lot of those areas are traditionally Democratic areas.
Yeah.
I've had three or four friends and acquaintances that have recently – switched parties. And they have flat out said that it took all this violence going on for them to open their eyes, mm-hmm. to see the blatancy of the propaganda, of the lies that they're being told for a vote. And they finally, and as much as I hate this word, they become woke.
It's called Blexit.
Yes. Yeah. And I like to give this story. It's true. It's not a made up story. When I was working for the state and I was working in downtown Austin, we had a park away from our building. We had a parking garage. I was about a block and a half away from our main building. So we'd get there at a certain time, and you always get to ride the elevator with the same people, walk that block and a half, and get to know people from other state agencies that work in that building. And when I first started there, I love wearing my cowboy hat, my boots and jeans and stuff. And I had this older black lady. She was probably in her mid to late 60s. And she comes up to me and she says, "You probably have a gun on, don't you?" And I kind of chuckled and grinned. And being a peace officer, I didn't tell her I was a police officer. I said, "Yes, ma'am." I said, "I'll let you know that, yes, I do have a concealed weapon on me." She goes, "Well, I bet you voted for Trump." And keep in mind, this was right after Trump got elected. And I told her, I said, "Yes, ma'am." And I was expecting this political exchange, to start. And she goes, "I did too. And I've got my gun in my purse." And I laughed, from that day on, we would have a conversation both to and from, because we got off at the same time. So we'd be walking. And her story was that it took her over 35 years to realize that the problem is the Democratic Party. The problem is the government pushing money and freebies to these high crime areas, because she was a nurse in Chicago. She was a public health nurse, and said she would go out to these neighborhoods, to these extremely violent high crime neighborhoods, the ones you hear on the news where they're shooting 10, 20, 30 people a weekend. Mm-hmm. She said the main problem was that is everyone was so dependent on the government. They didn't need a job. They got free cell phones. They got funding, housing for sometimes $1 a month is what came out of their pocket. So there was no need for them to get a job. There was no moral obligation for hard work, because everything was being given to them. And she said it took her over 30 years to figure that out. But then one day the light bulb came on. She said she couldn't do it anymore, because she realized that she was part of that problem. From the community that was part of her community, that's where she grew up, that's where she was from. She grew up on those streets. And she finally realized that the government was not helping anybody, they were hindering them. They were creating the problem by giving these freebies out to everybody. And that really, made a lasting impression on me because of her sincerity of this. And she was so adamant that to help the black community and to help minority communities in general, that we need to get in there and teach them morals, what's right from wrong, that living in that cycle of crime, that the gangster way of life is not the appropriate way. That's not the way we as a society should be living, that we have moral obligations. We have civic duties that unfortunately have become so lost in the last 20 years. I don't even know if there's civics taught in school anymore.
Yeah, I doubt it. Before when I'm much older than you, when I was a kid, churches and nonprofit organizations like Salvation Army and that, they're the ones who took care of people and provided a leg up, so to speak, when times were hard. It wasn't the government, but as soon as the government started taking over, that's when these socialist ideas are promoted and encouraged and broadened. And now you got cities that are havens for these socialist agendas, like Chicago, New York, Portland. And what's happening? They're falling apart.
Poverty is what's happening.
Yes. Yes. Poverty happens, and crime and everything else that goes along with it. Disrespect for the police. I have friends who used to be on the Portland Police Department. It's Portland Police Bureau. But You know, I'm glad my son wasn't able to follow me in this career field, because I'd worry about him all the time. He had a very bad motorcycle accident that gave him, you know, kept him from going into law enforcement. So, you know, he's got a good career now, but it's not something that I would encourage people to go into right now.
No, in this day and age, you know, I wouldn't encourage the same. You know, I got stuck in that law enforcement mentality, and until I got injured, which is the reason why I got out of full-time law enforcement, was due to an injury. You know, I went through withdrawals for about 6 months, and it's true. It becomes a lifestyle. It literally, the law enforcement family and just the everyday way of life really gets into you, and you live that day in, day out. Mm-hmm. Because, well, sometimes you don't trust. There's no trust there with the community, and it comes back to dealing with the criminal element on the daily basis. I had to retrain myself and think, you know, there are a lot of good, decent Americans out there. Mm-hmm. No matter what your race, what your political affiliation is, there's a lot of good, decent, hardworking people out there that all they want to do is make it day by day, provide for their family, and do whatever they can to make it the best for them. And I really started getting back into my social networks, because as we know in law enforcement, we kind of distance ourselves away from, you know, the rest of society. You know, friendships that we've had since high school or college, a lot of times get terminated because, as a friend of mine said, he goes, you know, I've sit there and talked to you for an hour, and all you've talked about was your job and what you did, you know, for the last month as a cop. He goes, I don't want to hear that. And it was a wake up call for me, because there are so many cops. And I see this now when I talk to younger generation of cops, that they're absolutely right. You know, my friend was right. It becomes such a lifestyle, just like a lot of other things, that's all you learn. And that's who you hang out with. And sometimes you get trapped in that cycle as well. Just as there's that cycle of violence, there's that cycle of law enforcement that, sometimes you need to take a stop and take a look around and say, hey, look, there's other things out there. And that's where I encourage people to, you know, look at other perspectives, look at other ways of doing things. Our way is not perfect.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of better ways than what people are suggesting it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. This defund the police is craziness. It's idiotic, and it is counterproductive to what they say they're trying to do, which I know there's a more sinister reason for doing this. And once I finish all my research, I'll probably come back to this. But I want to throw in a little fun here at the end. There's an article out there right now where, you know, Sturgis just happened, the Sturgis bike rally. There's about 8 Antifas showed up out there with signs and stuff, and police protection.
Yes.
Police protection. Can you imagine? So, these poor misguided Marxists, they think that they're going to, I got to hand it to them. They were brave enough to do it, but they're idiots for doing it, because at some point they're going to get caught without their police protection. And there were quite a many tens of thousands of bikers out there. And I can just imagine what would happen.
Oh yeah.
Because those Antifas, they're mouthy.
Oh yes. And what amazes me is, when they actually get confronted, they back down
most of the time. Chicken. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they're in a group. That's the only time. That's why they fight the way they do, because they're all in a group. Now, another thing I want to bring up, I get a lot of people say that Black Lives Matter is a peaceful organization. Well, its founders admit to being socialist or Marxist, I can't remember, community organizers. But who was it that coined the phrase, what do we want, dead cops? When do we want it now? That wasn't anybody but Black Lives Matter. That is not peaceful. That's inciting. And those people, there's people, there's innocent, ignorant people that are involved in these protests. They don't understand the real reason this stuff's going on, because they're not protecting those kids that got shot in Chicago or Minneapolis. They're only going after white cops who shoot black people.
And so even then, they're not even showing all the facts of the story when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's the media. The media is part of this evil empire.
It's a big part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge part of it, because that's the Democrat propaganda machine. And they're the ones who drive the narrative. Otherwise, if black lives truly mattered, there would not be any more black babies aborted, and there would not be any more violence in the streets of any of these inner cities. Baltimore, Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, anywhere. So Black Lives Matter, it's a challenge. If you really care about black lives, make sure it's every black life, everywhere, and even in the womb, period.
And I agree with you. And that circles back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, is there is so much going on in the black and other minority communities that need to be changed.
Yes.
That result in this violence. You know, it's like they put their blinders on and they'll say, oh, there's so many shootings, but we're not going to do anything to step in to fix it because it's all the police. It's all the government's fault.
No,
it's not. You know, when the Black Lives Movement mm-hmm. first came out, that's probably been 10, 13 years ago now, when it first started gaining traction, you know, there's the movement, and, you know, there, because of the disparity, and there is a lot of, you know, blacks that live in poverty, that's something that we cannot deny. The numbers are out there.
Right.
You know, so I was agreeing with, you know, there is some things that need to be changed. I'd have my head in the sand if I said there wasn't.
Right.
But then when it became an organization and it started getting funded, and you start looking at where some of this funding's coming from and how many millions of dollars are being pushed into it, and you wonder where this money's coming from and where it's going and the need for that much money for a movement. It's what we call political action committees.
I know where it's going. You go to the Black Lives Matter website and you hit on donate. And then there's another link where you go, where's this money going? It goes to Act Blue, and Act Blue is funneling that money to Democrat campaigns. There's a nonprofit out there that had a video that showed all those steps, and it was amazing.
Well, and this comes circling back to doing worse research. Stop taking mainstream media's word.
Yes.
Get out there, start looking. Look at the historical aspect. Start looking at statistics. You know, everything is numbers driven these days.
Yeah.
There's so much numbers out there that you can look at it. You know, go to the Department of Justice website, and you're still going to find that white males are one of the highest rates of, you know, use of force, deadly use of force, you know, that yet we don't hear people out protesting and burning down buildings and, you know, breaking windows of Starbucks because, you know, white people are getting killed by cops at a higher rate. Now, keep in mind, this doesn't talk about whether it's justified shootings or not, you know, whether use of force was authorized. It just gives the number of X number of people were killed, and here's the breakdown on demographics. And you're still seeing white males are one of the highest demographic rates of officer-involved shootings. Yet, we don't hear anything about that because it doesn't fit that agenda.
That's right. It's all agenda-driven. It's all about, one, an election, and two, about total control. What they want to do is they want to Californicate the whole United States. They want one-party rule over all the United States. And if Hillary would have won, that's what we would have right now, in my humble opinion. Matt, we're coming close to an hour here. It was great having you on. I'm going to have you on again here soon. And I like this new video format. We're going to have to work on this a little bit. And and do some more. But I have a feeling this is going to be a very popular format for us. But there will be more. There will be more. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. And be sure to check out our videos at Civil Defense Radio Podcast on YouTube. And I'm putting up the older episodes up on there. It's all audio. But like I said, we'll probably have more coming up. And check out our Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, our Twitter account at civil_def_radio, and Instagram at Civil Defense Radio. And I, Facebook and some of the articles go up onto Twitter, but Facebook is where I post most of this stuff because it's quick and easy for me. It's just the way it is. I'm trying to get there, guys. So please bear with me. Please like and share all these videos, these episodes on our podcast, and comment. We want to hear your comment. If you have ideas about something, let us know. Be civil and be Christian-like in your conversation. No vulgarity, because you'll be bumped, period. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want any obscenities at all. So Antifa, BLM, hey, be civil. We can discuss things, but you get obscene and you're going to be gout, period. So anyways, I wish to thank Matt again for being on the show. And
it's a pleasure. And, thank you.
Hey, man, it's this is like number 5 for you, I think, or four or five.
4 or 5, yes.
Yeah, something like that. There'll be more. Anyways, also, I'd like to thank you, our friends and listeners out there, and our new YouTube audience. And I really, really appreciate you guys being out there and supporting us. And so please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.
Thank you, President.